With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Kurt, another week of PBT Extra. We got a lot to talk about. But first and foremost, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Like, it's the holiday season. It's kind of fun. This week, had a Friendsgiving last weekend. All my family's home, kids home from college for a few days. Like, so everybody's back together. That makes it fun. That's supposed to be what it's about. It's what it's about around here. So we're in a good place. What about you?
I'm doing really good. It's so funny, like, with Thanksgiving here, I'm kind of like in this weird moment right now where I don't really know how to feel. You know, Notre Dame season's wrapping up. We got a huge game. Huge.
That's a huge
against
game.
USC. Yeah. I mean, USC's number 5 on the cusp, right? Number six, right? Right on the cusp of the college football playoff.
Isn't the sense that if they beat Notre Dame, they would slide past whoever loses Michigan, Ohio State into the playoff?
It's just like, what? So for me, the opportunity, if you really think about it, to maybe knock out the USC, you know, in their college football playoff hopes. And it's such a historic rivalry. And to redeem the season the way that started, you know, with Marcus Freeman there, to then end it like this. And then, I mean, that would be huge. To play spoiler would be pretty nice for a Notre Dame fan, right? I mean, I know you're a Notre Dame fan. So
I am. And after the win over Clemson, like, you feel like, and the way they dominated Clemson, you feel like it's possible.
It's very possible. It feels very possible. So it's like, okay, yeah. So that's kind of what I'm looking at right now. And then obviously, college basketball is here, and it's in a big way. But this is like, to me, can we focus on Notre Dame this weekend in the college basketball? So that's kind of where I'm at. But you know, it's funny. This week we saw a reunion, a homecoming, I should say, that I don't know. I would be very curious to hear what you thought about Ben Simmons going back to Philly, because he expected more booze. We know how serious Philadelphia fans are. So what did you think about the homecoming?
First off, it wasn't just him. I mean, Stan Van Gundy on the broadcast said, oh my gosh, I think the Philly fans have let me down. But I think part of it was no Joel Embiid, no James Harden, no Tyrese Maxey. Like, some of the energy just got, I mean, they still won, but like, some of the energy got sucked out of the building by them not being there. And I've got to give Ben Simmons credit. He handled this about as well as you can handle it, right? Like, I mean, off the court, said all the right things. He's taking selfies pregame with fans. He's joking around. He's got a smile on his face the whole time. Finished with 11 points, 4-7 shooting, 11 dimes. Played. They didn't win, but he played pretty well in a string of playing pretty well. He's been playing a lot better lately the last few games. What did you think? I thought for Ben, I don't know that could have gone much better. The rest of the Nets might be another conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of, for me, I thought this was a very bad showing for the Nets. You know, Kurt, I thought potentially that Jacques Vaughn could kind of like spark something within the Nets organization, right? And I thought it would be like take the same turn as the Atlanta Hawks. I was wrong. I think this is a perfect example of this middling Nets team of what they are. And unfortunately, that's, you know, inadequate team, or maybe even a below adequate team with incredible star power. And I understand, like, the Ben Simmons, like, homecoming, like you said, it probably went as well as it could have, minus getting a win. But ultimately, I zoomed out from that and said, wow, this Nets team isn't very good. And I kind of lost hope. And I know this is early, but I really did lose hope for the rest of the season.
I don't think you're alone there, are you? It's hard not to watch them get taken apart defensively by, again, Tobias Harris. I love B-Ball Paul as much as anybody. Like, he does not get enough talk, and he had a great game. Punish them. They're small. You watch everybody who plays them who can go big, and they just get punished inside. And, I mean, Corey, maybe I'm reading too much into it. They're showing Kevin Durant on the sidelines after the game, and he'd been joking around and playing with, you know, George Niang. He looked frustrated. And
yeah, you hit it right on the head. There was a moment, I think, in the third or fourth quarter where Kevin Durant was trying, I mean, clapping at teammates, trying to, like, get him excited. Because I'm thinking about this. No Joel Embiid. No Tyrese Maxey. No James Harden.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even close. Like, this game, I know it was like a 10-point game, but like when you watch the game, I mean, it wasn't even like the Nets just looked outplayed. There were times when, I mean, the half court set break down on like a simple dribble handoff, right? And then the 76ers would be in the passing lanes on a fast break. And I'm thinking, how is this possible? You know, like this is with Kyrie Irving, with, you know, with Kevin Durant, like, this should never, ever happen. With Ben Simmons, this should never happen. Simple communication breakdown on offense. And on the other end, you know, to be outplayed offensively, you know, by that, without any of the three top scorers for the 76ers, just absolutely catastrophic.
Yeah, and I you wonder where this leaves them long-term. Because, I mean, we keep saying it's early in the season, because technically, I mean, we're not even quite a quarter of the way into it yet. But it's also far enough into the season where you're like, I don't know, man. Like, it's getting to the point where the numbers are real, the issues are real, and I don't know that there's a simple – I mean, Brooklyn's got to decide what they're going to do, but do they go all in and try to get a trade for a Miles Turner, Jakob Poeltl, somebody to get a big in the middle? Like, I mean – do you try to patch this thing up and find a way to win? Because you look at the top of the East, like, Boston looks great.
Yeah.
Milwaukee looks great. And, oh, by the way, both of them are missing key players. Like, they are both going to get better as this season goes on. And I don't know that this team can compete with them, even if they make a couple of moves.
And, you know, I agree with you. I don't think they can. And I think we're two games away from we talked about the 20 game, you know, let's assess the season. We're 18 games in for the Brooklyn Nets. And this was one of those, writing on the wall kind of games for me.
Yeah.
And like we talked about before, the fact that they were even thinking about courting Ime Udoka, given that background and what's happening right now. And you think about the way they handled the Kyrie Irving suspension, and he's back on the team. For me, this is one of those. This is just another series of just bad decision making, right? In a series of bad decision making for the Brooklyn Nets, and I think it's just, as a Nets fan, I would advise you just to weather the storm, because there's just nothing else you can do. I feel like you have to just wait for this to pass, and that's actually, you know, a pretty remarkable thing with that roster. You just have to wait for it to pass.
It is amazing. I think that's the disappointing part, right? Is that when we looked at this going into last season, before all this started, we're like, oh, who's going to beat the Nets? And that was in that they had James Harden, but we started looking and they had Joe Harris at shooting, and Nick Claxton was coming along, and on down the line, they just, like, there was good role players. And you're like, I don't know who's going to beat this team. And it is never gelled like we thought it should gel. And that's a little on management. It's probably a little on the players. I don't know that anybody's blameless in this, but I don't have an easy, like, oh, this is, you know, some sports talk radio hot take there. It's just, it should be better. It should be better than it is, and it's just not.
Yeah. I think from when I look at this, you know, just before we go into Philadelphia and the takeaways for them, you know, when I look at this for the Nets, I think it's very clear. The thing that you're waiting to get past is the Kyrie Irving that's the first immediate scenario. What do you do with Kyrie Irving? And you're almost done with that experiment. Well, who knows what's going to happen, but in theory,
you might have to ride this season out. There is, I will just say, talking to people around the league, there is zero trade value.
So you ride the season out. That's the waiting. And then with Kevin Durant, I know we signed that extension, but I mean, just seeing the body language on the court, seeing what happened this offseason, you could I mean, do you think there's a chance that he requests another trade, you know, with sometime in the next 3 years?
Sometime before next June. Yes. Like I don't know that you can pull off a Kevin Durant trade at the deadline, just because it's harder to pull off those kind of mega deals mid season. It's not that they can't happen. They're just more difficult, but I personally would be surprised if he's back there next year. And I think what they ask back for him changes. They're going to want some picks back. It's gone from, we don't really want to trade him, so you've got to give us all this win now stuff, to we've got to retool this thing. So yeah. We need our picks back. We need a bunch of stuff.
I agree completely. So then you think, okay, well, in the next year, let's say going into next season, you're building a team around Ben Simmons, essentially, or whoever you get back. And I don't think, and this is the crazy thing, is I'm going to say this, Kurt, and forgive me, this seems like a hot take, but I don't think that's a bad idea. I mean, really, I think you're looking at Ben Simmons. We know he's a unique player. We know he looks like he's playing with joy again, which I think is a very important, critically underrated element, right, of playing a professional sport, because it is ultimately a job. And we always hear that adage, do what you love. And it looks as though he has found a renewed vigor. And who knows what could happen if you give him the right piece, you know, in a post-Kevin Durant world, whatever you get back from that. We know that, you know, what Rudy Gobert commanded. Who knows? Maybe you could find maybe a renaissance of what we're seeing in Cleveland, right, where Darius Garland's playing well. It looked like he was hitting his stride. And then Donovan Mitchell came, and what was an absolute boon to that team, potentially something similar could happen in Brooklyn with Ben Simmons. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that could be really interesting.
And I think that ownership and management there, they sacrificed their culture somewhat to bring in Irving and Durant. They gave them a lot of say over, you know, from the day they signed DeAndre Jordan to an oversized contract, all this stuff. Like, they gave those guys a lot of power. I think you're going to see them try to rebuild the blue collar-ish, hardworking culture they had before, where they went and found Spencer Dinwiddie and they went and found Caris LeVert. And I think they want to get back to that culture and that identity. And Ben Simmons can be part of that, but like, you've got to get back to something other than what this was.
Yeah. And then Philadelphia, I think the takeaway from Philly, at least for me watching that game, is you can win without your top three scorers, you know? I mean, you can win without Maxi and without, of course, Harden and your perennial MVP candidate, Joel Embiid, which is something that we see in the top contenders like the Milwaukee Bucks, where Giannis is eating popcorn on the bench and they don't have to worry about it, right? Like, that, I think, is a really great step forward. And it actually surprised me, because I didn't think that Philadelphia was there, quite frankly. I you know, we always talk about that team, and it's like, well, why aren't they better than number three, you know? And I think they're finally, right now, they're showing me that, hey, they might actually be better than they have been in the past years. And it might come together sooner rather than later if they can figure out, you know, the Embiid, Harden, Maxi question. But the rest of that bench, the rest of that team, they look really good, Kurt.
There's always been potential there. I think at this point, it's just a matter of getting them all on the floor together, right? Like, you've got to build some more chemistry, some more time, because it didn't flow as smoothly, but that's something that can be, a lot of it could be worked out, and you've got to figure out where the defense is going to come from. There, with Harden and Maxi in the backcourt, they're going to need, they hurt for wing defending a little bit, and they were like, can we put Tybal in, or do we need to go get somebody else? I think, and maybe Tucker hasn't been all they hoped yet, but I still think that can gel into, and there's plenty of time for that to gel into a team that's a serious threat when it gets to just playing 16, having to win 16 more starting mid-April.
Yeah.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
So now let's talk about Memphis, shall we?
So yeah.
Let's talk about John Morant. Yeah, we He's dealing with some injuries. And last night he came back, or the time of this recording, the last night from this recording, he came back and dropped 34. So what did you think about the way that the Memphis Grizzlies are handling Ja Morant's grade one ankle sprain?
It's interesting because I think there's a hard line to walk with him. And as a high level athlete, I'd be really curious your thoughts on this, because you're trying to balance. Look, I don't know how his ankle feels. I do not have his ankle. I have my own bad ankles. I don't need his. He gets out, and obviously it wasn't bothering him. Clearly, whatever the grade one sprain was, he looked like he was fine from. But there is a longer-term concern with him that he's kind of a skinny guy who leaps out of the building, which means, by the way, then you have to come down a long way. He is this Dwayne Wade, Allen Iverson attacking the rim, aggressive, takes the contact kind of style. And there is a genuine concern that can wear on him over time. That is he physically built to handle what he's going to, I don't want to say the abuse is the wrong word, but the physicality he's going to take going to the rim every time like this over the long haul. When you jump up and get hit and you knock down and you land on your side of your back enough times, like, it just builds. And so I think there's a concern, there's a caution there. They clearly let him back for this game, and I guess he was fine, dropping 34. But long-term, I'm curious, like, how do you think you would want to deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at, you know, his how many games he played in each of his seasons so far. He played 67 games in 2019-2020, 63 games in 2020-2021. Last season played 57 games, and then so far he's played 15 out of 18 games for Memphis. So, you know, I think when you ask the durability question, you know, the biggest thing for any superstar is availability. And I think you're right. The way that he plays is so aggressive, so physical, that it naturally would call into question that durability question. But I wouldn't be as concerned, because I've actually been impressed by his ability to stay on the court and especially play when his team needs him, when it matters later in the season, right? So I think he's shown me enough to allay those concerns. But I do think the ankle sprain is interesting, because as a former athlete myself, I can tell you those never go away.
No.
You're never like healed from ankle sprains. Like, they always linger. So this is one of those things that it's going to be – it's not like you can just sit out 4 to 6 weeks and then come back 100%. Like, it's just, it's always there.
Yeah. It's always easier to re-injure than just about anything else. Right. Cause the ligament has been stretched and it never quite goes back, and you end up with, it's not that it can't be managed, Stephen Curry, with orthotics and braces, and like, there's stuff you can do, but I mean, he has a regimen. He has, like, it's a process for him. It is, he takes care of his ankles. I think Ja may end up having some of those moments down the line. And the Grizzlies as a whole, aren't they impressing you? I mean, this is still, they're still very good. And without, by the way, Desmond Bane this year.
You know, yeah. I mean, the Grizzlies, every year it seems like they just continue to impress me. And the way that they're running their organization is extremely impressive. It seems like they're clicking on all cylinders, which is great. And yeah, I think when it comes to the injury management, this is an art form, Kurt, and a lot of athletes, I don't think, well, I don't want to say that, because it's an art form, and it takes a long time to learn how to be a professional about this, right? And I think that you hit it right on the money. The guys like Steph Curry or LeBron James, one of the reasons why they're Hall of Famers and why they're so great is because they have understood, you know, the professional aspect of taking care of your body. And with something like this, like I said, unless you're talking about, you know, going into the off season where you have 3 months to rest, this is one of those, okay, well, how do you manage the injury? How do you add it, you know, into your routine? And to do that, you have to be around older guys or be around your colleagues, right? Like in the Olympic team kind of program, where you learn from, hey, like LeBron, how do you do that? That's why I think Anthony Davis going to go play with LeBron was so great, because he even said that in some interviews where he's like, I learned how to take care of my body by being around LeBron. And you only understand that if you spend time with him. You also hear those kind of stories coming back from people who went to the Olympics with Kobe Bryant. It's like, oh, yes, that's how you prepare. That's how you train, you know. So I think when Ja, he's early in his career, but when Ja Morant is going to, when he's around those older guys, those veterans, because, you know, quite frankly, he doesn't have those on his team. So when he goes to the All-Star weekends and when he goes and plays around the, you know, Team USA, along his career moving forward, that's where I think he's going to take it to another level and address that durability question even further. But, you know, that's more like down the road.
That's down the road. Speaking of the Grizzlies, it's time for Corey's Jukebox, and I think you actually have a song for or music for the Grizzlies as part of our trip into music this week.
Yes, and this is an homage, an homage to you, Kurt. I wanted to make sure that we both, our musical needs are being met. And I did a punk phase in my life. I know that punk music is really big where you're from.
How'd that go, Dad?
I do come from a military family. We're very conservative. But you know, there's always that phase of rebellion, I guess. And mine was listening to punk music and getting a blonde mohawk. So it happened.
Now I want pictures. Now I want pictures.
It happened on national television. I was wearing, I had a blonde mohawk when I was playing in football in Notre Dame. But the punk music thing came later. And I really thought that the Memphis Grizzlies, if I had to think of them as a team, for some reason, they just hit me. They strike me as a punk band. They're just this young, even like the coach is young, like the owner is young, like everything about it is just like, let's do things kind of different. And they have like this type of rebellious stripe that isn't necessarily, it's like truly kind of avant-garde in a weird way.
Yeah.
And they're also operating in like a small market, but it feels different. Memphis feels different than, all the other kind of smaller market teams. They have like this really unique energy. So I wanted to go to the Descendants. And one of the most classic punk albums of all time, because we only talk about masterpieces, right? So you and I. So we talk about Milo Goes to College. I just said the whole album. And they actually have a song on that album about bears.
Actually, that's a good point. They do. That is a transcendent punk album, by the way. That I'm trying to think of the right phrase, but it is it is the punk inarticulate rage thing. Like they're just mad at everything with power. And some of that doesn't always age well, but like that's kind of that angst of punk rock is very evident in that album. But it's also in the early 80s, one of the first bands to kind of bridge punk it gets a little more melodic. It's not Green Day punk pop, pop punk. But it's not Black Flag either. It's the first times one of the few times you start to see melodies and harmonies stuff kind of blend in. And that becomes, even among the Bad Religions and the more traditional punk bands of the world, like you start to see the best ones have some of the stuff that the Descendants break out in that album.
Yeah. And I love, the thing I love most about this album is that the songs are like 40 seconds, like I Want to Be a Bear song is 43 seconds long. And like, there's no like ramp up. There's no kind of like, oh, that's easy. No, it's long. It just starts with like punching you in the face, like kicking down the door, and it keeps that energy up. And then it just ends. And when I watch, Ja Morant play, it's like, he just jumps over people, dunks on 7-footers. Like he just does what, it's just like the whole Memphis Grizzlies is kind of like energy at a high level, like rubber bands flying around. It's just punk music. It's just raw.
Plenty of trash talk.
To the Grizzlies. Just punk. So, and even the way that I really do think of them as a punk band. But for the individual player this week, because we talk about the Grizzlies. We talked about punk. I wanted to go into jazz now. We're veering into a little more kind of this one is more reflective jazz. It's a French standard, Autumn Leaves. But I wanted to do the one by Errol Gardner. It's an incredible jazz pianist. And there's this album called Concert by the Sea. It's one of the best live albums in jazz music, in my personal opinion. And his version, his rendition of Autumn Leaves reminds me, it just brings to my mind Kawhi Leonard. Because don't you feel like there's this moment of like a sweet sadness, it's almost like this weird, like nostalgic longing, and we're, about to go into winter. Like, I just, like, it almost feels like Kawhi is like sitting on a team bus looking out the window and it's kind of raining, you know, and he's kind of like in his hoodie and it's like, I'd like to be out there soon. You know, I'm playing like a lot more. You know, like, I feel like there's like that moment with the Clippers where it's like kind of like this nostalgic distance. And that's why whenever I listen to that song, I'm just like kind of like Kawhi Leonard, where sometimes he's out there, sometimes he's not. Like, when is he gonna, you know, that feeling of when are we gonna see Kawhi be back as a Clipper and to be back at what we remember them playing at that kind of that high level back in the bubble, or, you know, way back a couple years ago when it first happened, but then also like what could be. So that's why I always think about Autumn Leaves, that transitioning.
I think that's a great call. I spent time with them this week as a story on Kawhi's return and how, when you talk to the Clippers this week recently, especially before that game where he made his return from the injury and they started him and they put him back in the starting lineup for the first time since the Jazz playoff series, you know, a couple of years ago, they were like, now there was almost this, now we have to be serious. All right. We've been able to keep our heads above water. Now we've got to, this has got to get right now, because it again, the season's moving along. We've got chemistry to build. And I think they went 3-0, and now he's going to sit out a game with an ankle injury. So I think that longing is a good word for it, because you can tell he wants to play more, and he knows he's got to wait.
Yeah, and that's one of the hardest things to do, right? I mean, this is back to like the Ja Morant, you know, do you play on an ankle sprain? You know, I feel good, but, you know, you have to be smart about it. And we know, you know, Kawhi, like, and the Clippers, they're going to be as patient as they need to be because he is the franchise, right? But at the same time, too, you're right. It's like eventually you're going to have to put it together, right?
Yeah. They've been lucky enough. They're 11-7 as we speak. They've been lucky, and I think fourth or fifth in the West. They've been lucky enough to win enough games that it hasn't hit them the way it's hitting the Nets, right? Right now. They're in a position where they can still continue to be patient without freaking out. But they also know, look, man, if we don't get him out there, if we don't start building the habits with the group, we're not going to build enough of them in time to take on what will be, you know, the Warriors are still going to be there. The Suns are still going to be there. It's, you know, Memphis is still going to be there. Like, it's still a deep West.
Yeah. And like the lyrics for Autumn Leaves, if you listen, first of all, the music itself, should, you know, is perfectly captures that longing. But this also, like, since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear old winter song, but I miss you most of all, my darling, when autumn leaves start to fall. You know, and that's like right when the basketball season starts, you think, okay, man, like, it's going to be great. Kawhi's going to be back. And then it's just, like you said, stop, start. I'm coming off the bench, starting lineup, off again. So it's like, man, eventually all Clipper Nation is like, I just miss you, Kawhi. I just want to see you out there. So that's why I went there. But, you know, you also are really high. I know you're really high on the Clippers. I know you're also really high on the Cavs. So yeah. I want to bring us into Kurt's Corner now to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's really dive into this. Let's give this a few minutes, because I think they're deserving, Kurt. Why do you like this?
Oh, yeah. Everything fit together with Donovan Mitchell. I mean, we thought, oh, that's a good bet for them, right? Like, going into this, when they made the trade, like, yeah, they gave up a lot, but this was a team poised to make a leap. But I don't know that I expected this much of a leap this fast. They have the second best offense in the league, sixth best defense in the league, second best net rating in the league this early. Mm-hmm. Like, it came together really quickly for them. And I genuinely, watching them early on, I do think they're for real. I think what we've learned, they've gone 3-4 in the last seven. What we've learned is that they haven't gotten the depth or the culture yet that you see with the, like we've discussed earlier, with the Bucks and the Celtics. Like, without Robert Williams, we can keep winning. We're without Chris Middleton, we can keep winning. They've gone 3-4 without, you know, missing Jared Allen, missing time, Donovan Mitchell missing time, like guys just missing games here and there. And I don't think they have the culture and depth and wherewithal yet to get through those moments as easily. Like, their defense has struggled the last seven games, and Jared Allen not being right is a big part of that. But if they're right, Corey, when they're right, I mean, you've been high on them too.
I agree. I think that I was curious to see how this would work. And it looks as though the Donovan Mitchell addition, I mean, it just like, it was like this alchemy that, because we saw it coming together, I would say, with Cleveland last year. We saw that play-in game, and we were like, wow, this team could be interesting, right? And then with Donovan Mitchell, it took them to another level. The question is, well, where do they sit? You know, because when we're talking about the real deal, we know the cream of the crop in the Eastern Conference that are competing for championships. You know, are they at the Boston Celtics level? Are they at the Milwaukee Bucks level? Are they at the, you know, the, and then beyond then the second tier of, you know, sorry, and the Miami Heat. We cannot forget about the Miami Heat. And then you think beyond that, it's like, okay, well, are they at the second tier of like the 76ers? You know, where do they sit in the Eastern Conference? And I don't think they're Boston level. I don't think that they're Milwaukee level. And I don't think that they're Miami level. But I really do think they're right there with the 76ers, you know, as far as like, and that's, once again, pretty crazy to think about when you think about who's on that 76ers roster and who's coaching that team, you know, and like, so it's like, they just jumped several spots to me. That's amazing.
I think they're in that second tier. I'm not, by the way, I'm not sure I'd have the Heat on that second tier right now. They're 7-11. And by the way, about to head into a brutal little stretch of games. They could drop a few more in there. They're just not to go on a Miami Heat tangent. They're not right, but they're also not getting, like last year when somebody go out saying, where'd they find Gabe Vincent? Where did Max Strus come from? They haven't had their Max Strus, Gabe Vincent guys. Like Duncan Robinson hasn't been consistent this season. They need Tyler Hero back. So anyway, I think with the Cavs, I think the Bucks and the Celtics are one tier, but I think they're in that second tier, and I think Philly's there, like where they can be a real threat to these teams, but they have to have more things go right.
Yeah,
there's just a larger margin for error in Boston and Milwaukee than there is for the Cavs. But they're capable. If it's going to go right, they are capable.
Yeah, I think of it like, I think about it like in expectations, you know, what are you looking for? Yeah. And there are some teams who are trying to, you know, win now mode. And then there are and those teams, I think you can either build it artificially, which would be kind of like, let's construct a super team and let's deal with, you know, the scorched earth that happens after you build a super team. We're seeing that with the Rams right now in the NFL, like you win, but at what cost, right? And we saw that with the Lakers. You win, but at what cost? It's been, you know, drudgery for the past few years.
There's a meme that goes around with Thanos talking to young, oh, what's her name? I'm going blank on the guy, her character, the daughter character. Did the Lakers win the ring? Yes. What did it cost us? Everything. So, the Rams are very much that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's like maybe it's just like a Los Angeles thing, right? But it's true. But it's like a super team. When you do that, you know, that's the cost of. But you know, one could argue that's what, you know, it takes to put up a banner, whatever. And then you think about, well, when you build a dynasty, I think there are a couple different ways to think about dynasties. And I don't want to get into a tangent too much, but you know, we can kind of pick at it. But there's this idea. Well, there's a human cost to building dynasties, you know, winning a two-peat or a three-peat or a four-peat, or no, sorry, it's two-peat or a three-peat. Like, what does that do with the human cost? And all you need to do is, you know, watch a 30 for 30 or your favorite docuseries to realize, like, there's the depth of the human cost in the relationships that, you know, that are hurt by doing some of those dynasties. But then you also have this other one, which is kind of like, I think, a healthy dynasty, one that, and we see that with like the Bucks. It takes 7 or 8 years to do that though, right? And then so with the Cavs, they're not there, right? Then they go into the second sphere for me, which is, well, how do you improve from a bad team to a playoff team, like a consistent playoff team, maybe go into the second round, right? Like, and I think that the Cavs are squarely in that. And so for me, the next 3 or 4 years, they might be able to jump from second round playoff team to maybe pushing deeper into that top tier. But that's the runway I see. I mean, do you agree? Do you disagree?
I do agree. I think that they jump-started that process because Donovan Mitchell has been so good. He has just been – there's not only with his shot creation, but there have to be fans in Utah who watch him try on defense and go, hey – now, like
Well, he was playing with Rudy Gobert, though. I mean, so it's almost like, you know, it's like, I feel like that's almost, it's kind of like when you think about, you know, some of these guys are like, can they actually play defense? But they have one of the best defensive players in the league right there. It's, you almost have a cushion. You're not really forced to show that side. And now we're seeing that side. It's like, oh, wow, that's a pretty holistic game.
Yeah. But he's been phenomenal for them. And so I'm with you. I think it might take them a year or two to build to the next level, but they are, with what he's brought them and the growth, by the way, it's a second year. I mean, really second or third year, but like Darius Garland's young and getting better. This whole team is, it's funny. I think I told you the story. I covered them. I went and saw them in person out here in Los Angeles a couple of times. And you go into their locker room after the game and they're all getting dressed and there's not a lot of ice and there's not a lot of recovery going on. And they're eating some food and stuff, but they're all kind of moving, except for, by the way, Kevin Love is in the corner, like head to toe in ice because he's got to be, but everybody else, that's still a young team that's not phased by the moment yet. Like, and they just look fantastic.
I think their secret sauce, by the way, is Kevin Love. Because I was recently at this dinner and someone gave me this really great advice, I think. At least I thought it was good advice. Where if you're going to have any type of conversation that's meaningful or substantial, you need to have three generations represented. Right. And I thought that was really fascinating when you think about policy, right? Where you think, okay, well, because the grandparents are the ones who've seen everything, you know, and then the parents are the ones who you know, are the decision makers, and then the kids are the ones who will inherit the future. So what we see here, if we want to take that thought process and apply it to the NBA, there are teams that are run by all kids, right? And then they have to teach themselves the rule, and it's kind of like Lord of the Flies. It doesn't work out very well, right? They eat each other, right? It's just not a good thing. Then you have the more of like all the parents operating, but then that's kind of like the 28 to 32 year old kind of superstars who are jumping teams, who don't know how to accept certain roles because, you know, they made their money, but now they want to win now, but they don't understand, you know, the future, and they don't understand what has come before them. They're kind of just operating in that current moment. That doesn't work either. And then there are some teams who are just too old to win, right?
Yeah.
And so then I think the Cavs, though, are in that sweet spot. I really do, because Kevin Love has won, and he's a veteran.
Yes.
And so, like, they have something that all the other young teams don't have. And that is a championship-caliber guy who's been around the league, you know, who understands what it's like to be the franchise player solo, you know, in Minnesota, to then joining a team, playing with LeBron. I mean, he has that institutional knowledge. And then you have Evan Mobley, the future, right? And you have Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, the future. And then you obviously with Donovan Mitchell, who is in that prime kind of like mid-range, the parent age, having been, you know, with Utah for so long, running that and then failing, and then now having another opportunity to push it forward. I think that that is what gives them that secret sauce.
I'm with you on Love, by the way. I think having a guy who's respected, and by the way, playing at almost a six man of the year level this year. Let's not like pretend that he's just out there doing his Udonis Haslam. Like he's out there really impacting games, but how much did he sacrifice his game to win? Right. Yeah. Like how much did he change his game in Cleveland to win the way Chris Bosh did in Miami around LeBron? Like guys made sacrifices around LeBron because LeBron's a maybe beyond just single generational talent. Like he's one of the, if not the all-time great. If you're going to play with a guy like that, you make changes to your game. I think that having that in the locker room, what he says brings respect, right? And he's backing it up on the court.
It's so hard to do that. I mean, we talk about egos all the time because at a certain point, everyone watching the game has to realize, you know, these are all everywhere they've been like the best player. Like ever, you know, so like being, and then like when you're actually a franchise player among everyone else who's also been the best player everywhere they've been, think about the level of ego associated with that. And then the fragility. I think a lot of people don't understand how fragile a lot of these guys are because, I mean, anyone who's an entertainer is incredibly insecure, which is why they entertain, you know, like they like to perform for other people and, you know, they are validated by other people's perception of their performance. That's show business. So you have like these incredibly fragile, insecure people who have tremendous egos. So that's why I think back to your point of respect, being a person who's been through multiple phases of that, accepted a role and is still, and is excelling in that role. And, you know, I mean, I have, like, you know, a lot of respect for what Kevin Love has done and the way that he plays and the way that he's kind of, you know, taken that stretch four and, you know, ushered us into this league of an athletic big man, you know, who can shoot from the 3-point line. Like, that kind of is like Kevin Love. That's like what he did. So I think that the Cavs are in a really great spot in that regard, more so than I think any other team in the league. I think the only other team that comes close is the Pelicans, if they can get Zion healthy, because CJ McCollum kind of is that person for them, but he has won, you know, so that's the difference.
He hasn't, but that's a great analogy. I think that they're, that's another team where there's a great mix.
Yeah. But I mean, like, those are the only two teams I think that kind of come close there. One team I want to ask you about, actually, before we move on, tell me, Donovan Mitchell, where does he rank for you in the NBA right now? Top five, top 10 player?
Top 10 for sure. I haven't started to put together, let's put it this way. I haven't started to put together my MVP. It's a little early for a serious MVP conversation, but he'd be, have to be one of the names I put in the, we'll call it the, like, college football watch list of the award, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you've got to put a number of guys in there. I think he'd have to be on that list. You'd like have to think about where he would fit. I don't know that he's better than Giannis or Tatum or Doncic or, you know, Curry, whoever you're putting at the top of these boards, but he's in the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, averaging a hair under 30 points, six assists and four rebounds this season so far. It's been very impressive.
And he's been,
I want to get you. Yeah. Very dynamic. That's a great word to describe. Dynamic Donovan is a great way to describe him right now. I want to get your take on Sacramento. Historically, it's been a dumpster fire. We can't get around that. It just has. No. You know, it is. It's a reality. Right now, they're looking pretty good. I know that you saw Tyrese Haliburton come out of the draft, one of your favorite players out of that draft, and he kind of has, I think, been a pretty good addition to that. You got Sabonis coming in. You have Kevin Huerter. So what do you think about what's happening in Sacramento right now? They look pretty decent.
They're so much fun. Like, this is the Beam team. First off, I love that they came up with this something to rally the fans and the team around, and they're genuinely into it. Like, who gets to light the beam is a big deal. They bring out a thing on court and you hit a button after the home wins. And, they took it, they admit they, I don't know if you've out here in Southern California, outside Angel Stadium, there is it must be 60, 70 foot tall, giant A with a halo for the thing. And if the Angels win, the halo lights up. So if you're just driving down the five at night going home, you're like, oh, Angels won tonight. Like, you don't have to look anywhere else. They kind of stole it from that idea, but it's a great rallying point for them. It's fun. This is as of last night, because they slipped a little, second best offense in the NBA this season, best offense in the NBA over their 7-game winning streak. And they're not great defensively. I'm not sold on, you know, like, again, I'm not sold on them being some sort of contender, but they look like a playoff team, and they're just, for a fan base that was,
star.
They've been going through the desert for 40 years, Corey. They found some water. They're pretty happy, man.
Yeah, it's been a dark, dark, dark time in Sacramento recently. But yeah, I the fact that you would even put playoff team and Sacramento in the same sentence.
Yeah, 16 years.
That is like meteoric rise for them. We talk about like the expectations. They escaped, if this was a soccer analogy, they escaped the relegation realm, right? And they're like, they're actually like playing well. The future here is really fascinating. I you mentioned the 7-game win streak. I just want to name some of the teams they beat. I mean, Golden State.
Yeah.
Brooklyn. I mean, we talk about Brooklyn, but they put up 153 points against Brooklyn. So that's a pretty emphatic win.
Yeah.
They beat the Grizzlies. And you look at all some of these numbers too offensively. 137 against Detroit, 130 against San Antonio, 122 against Golden State, 127 against Cleveland in their win, 120 against the Lakers. I mean, this is like, it's a different kind of way to play basketball. I know you said not there's no defense there, but when you're scoring like that, can they do that consistently?
I think so. I think during the regular season that they can absolutely pull this off. And I don't think their defense hasn't been great. I don't think it's horrible, but you're not, look, if Domantas Sabonis is your center, you're not going to have great defense. It's just kind of how it is. But they've got some decent guys on the wing, and they've got some depth they can bring in with Monk and guys to create opportunities. or play some defense in spots. But right now, they're just having so much fun. Corey, they're just fun. They're just fun to watch. You mentioned the Pacers with Haliburton. I think these are two of the most fun teams now because they're both playing fast, getting up and down, and they're, in the Kings' case, they're just an offensive juggernaut because De'Aaron Fox has been fantastic, but they're just getting role players. Kevin Huerter has been amazing in a role where just he's unleashed to knock down shots.
The question that comes to my mind is, you know, are we seeing, I mean, this might be too early to tell. I don't know. You have to tell me. You know, in college football, you know, there was a transition from kind of a traditional kind of run game, if you will, to spread it out. And let's not even think about defense as much, kind of more of a formality other than on third down, right? Or blitz packages. Yeah. Let's just score points. And if, you know, you might put up 30 points against us, but we put up 40 something, right? And that is, could we see a shift in the way that we're looking at some basketball teams where in Sacramento, perhaps they're thinking, look, you might be a better defensive team than us, but can you score more than 120 points? And is that even like feasible to see a dynamic shift in the NBA that way?
I think during the regular season, you'll see some of that because I think you can still win. Like, you can win games the way Sacramento's winning, the way Indiana's winning. Like, I think you can outscore teams to a point, but then eventually kind of catches up with you. Like, if you want to win a title, if you want to contend in a serious way, then you've got to play really good defense. But you don't have to be that team the first 82. Like, you can score your way to the playoffs. And I think they've set up a team in Sacramento that can do that, right? Like, they're an entertaining team that can beat you. Sabonis knows how to score inside. They've got a slasher in Fox. They've got a shooter in Huerter. They've got Harrison Barnes is kind of a glue guy who can do a lot of different things. And between all of that, it just kind of works.
Yeah. And I think about the old Spurs teams with George Gervin, you know, when they were like scoring champions, you know, it's like there was a period of time there where it was just like, who could outscore the Spurs? So I do wonder, like you said, they didn't win titles, but it did set the groundwork for future, you know, for future players to come
and,
in.
And how do Spurs fans look back on those teams?
Yeah, true.
I think that for a fan base as starved as Sacramento, I couldn't be happier for them. That's by the way, if you get the chance, maybe the nicest new building in the league.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love their arena. So now we're right around the corner from Thanksgiving, only a day away. I'm curious. There's a lot of sporting events happening. So for our fun segment, how are you going to spend Thanksgiving? You had a Friendsgiving last week, but this week it's, you know, Sunday night football on Thursday night. There is the World Cup. What are you watching?
And no NBA on Thanksgiving night. So honestly, we're watching a lot of World Cup in this house. It's not just that we had two soccer playing daughters when it's still playing in, you know, high school and club ball, but beyond that, like, we've kind of been into the sport for a while. So I guess we'll watch the NFL game that night, I'm sure. And who do the Cowboys lose to? I mean, it's a tradition, right?
Wow.
We've been really into World Cup and pulling a big USA game on Friday. USA England is, I'm nervous about us after watching us in the first game going up against England, who looked dominant, but I am excited for that game as well. I mean, what are you going to be watching?
Yeah, I will probably be watching the National Dog Show. I love, so Thanksgiving, I don't really celebrate. Yeah, I technically don't really celebrate Thanksgiving just because, you know, I've always played or practiced, you know, with football. We were always playing. Yeah. I've never really had never been a big like Thanksgiving guy. But recently I've been watching, the past couple of years, I've been watching the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on NBC. So I love watching that. And then I roll into the dog show. And then basically, you know, that's the end of my Thanksgiving. I kind of just take a nap after that. And the dog show has quickly become one of my absolute favorite traditions. Like, you have no idea how hype I get for this show. Like, I love the National Dog Show. Claire, the Scottish Deerhound, stole my heart 2 years ago when she won Best in Show. She repeated last year. And I mean, I was like really cheering for her. I mean, you have no idea. Like, I am a huge, massive Claire fan. And I think she could three-peat. I really do. I mean, she's so queenly. She's regal. She's, I mean, not only is she elegant, but she's sweet and gentle and just really cool. I just think the world of Claire. So for me, I'm watching to support Claire, but it's all in all, it's like an unbelievable event. I love the features. I love watching the dogs trot. I mean, I just love the whole thing. I'm really like a huge fan of this event, Gert.
That's an NBC property, Alexa, if you're listening. That's an NBC property, man. So, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas. I'm finding some Claire clothing.
If there is a Claire merch out there, I never even thought about that. If there's like a Claire hoodie, I'm telling you, you have no idea how I would rock that. Like, I love this dog. I never thought about, I don't have a dog. I never thought about Scottish Deer Hounds, you know, prior to Claire.
Big dog.
But yeah, now, I mean, after watching her win, you know, like, it's just not unprecedented, but I mean, it's really unmatched, unparalleled dominance. Like, she is, quite frankly, the hottest dog in the world right now.
Well, now you've got me. Now you've added to my, we often have, I don't know, against World Cup, I don't know if we'll see. It'll be flipping back and forth between Macy's, because we actually watch that out here on the West Coast. Sometimes my wife and I will watch that and go, hey, that musical looks like one I should go see. Like, we get everything second out here. So we're like, Hadestown, that looks interesting. And then we went and saw Hadestown and loved it. So, and on down the line. So we do watch some of that, but with World Cup on, we'll be flipping back and forth. They're not taking a day off. And, yeah. And by the way, I'm rooting for USA. I was rooting for Messi in Argentina. I might have to find a third team now.
I know. That was, I'm telling you, that was when Saudi Arabia beat Argentina. That was shocking.
Your Spain won it all. They lost their first group play game and came back. But that's you are doing what we were talking about with Brooklyn. You're making your road really hard to get through, man.
Very difficult. We'll see how it plays out. But if anyone who wants to learn more about what you're doing, Kurt, where can they head?
NBCSports.com, the NBA page, or you can follow me on Twitter at Basketball Talk. Everything's there as well. We got power rankings coming out later today. And I'm going to spoil it and say the Celtics are on top, shockingly. And whatever you do, Corey, don't look where the Spurs land.
Oh, that's not the news I wanted to hear going into Thanksgiving, but you know, it's okay. Man. The holiday season is long. Hopefully things change before Christmas rolls around. Kurt, it's always a pleasure. I will talk to you.
Take care,
buddy.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.